It's getting hard to keep track of the anomalies in the oceans. We've got El Nino, the blob of unusually warm water, increasing acidity, and a major algae bloom in the Pacific this year. And it's a toxic bloom causing seizures in marine mammals and other effects on ocean wildlife. Let's get the picture on what happened. Kathy Lefevre is a research biologist with NOAA Fisheries, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's fisheries branch. She's the creator of the Wildlife Algal Toxins Research and Response Network, or WARN West. Kathy, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Hello, good morning.
First off, we do hear a lot about freshwater HABs, or harmful algae blooms. How common are they in the ocean?
Harmful algal blooms in the ocean are common, not like the one we've had this year where it's such a large geographic extent. But we do have harmful algal blooms in the ocean in various places.
Let's talk about the geographic extent of this year's bloom then. How big?
So this year has been sort of unprecedented because the bloom is extended from Southern California as far north as Alaska. And the interesting part of it is typically the blooms last for maybe a few weeks and they're sort of in more discrete geographic areas. But this year the bloom has lasted for the entire summer.
Really? So it's not only larger in size, and how much larger in size? I mean, we talk about Southern California to Alaska.
It's massive. I mean, it's spanning the entire U.S. West Coast, and so we're seeing a lot more of the toxin in the marine food web at in a higher geographic extent.
So let's talk about the toxin. Is domoic acid?
That's correct.
I've seen some of the. In fact, I watched a little bit of the video of a sea lion having a seizure yesterday, and that's because of exposure to it.
Yes. So it's interesting. Domoic acid is a single molecule that's naturally produced by these algae, and the algae are just single-celled plant-like organisms that can bloom in the ocean. That's how we get these harmful algal blooms. And domoic acid is actually a neurotoxin. So what it does is it interacts with nerves, and the molecule itself has a part of it that looks exactly like glutamate. And glutamate is the normal neurotransmitter in the central nervous system of mammals, like you and I and marine mammals. And that's how our cells signal each other to do various things and movement, et cetera. Well, domoic acid also binds to these receptors in the nerves, but because of its structure is a little bit different, it's more rigid, and it binds, and this is for lack of a better word, but it binds harder or tighter, and it overstimulates the nerve. And that's why you get these excitotoxic, we call them, symptoms like seizures. So the nerves are overfiring, and that's how we get seizures. And eventually you'll get cell death. Nerves can die in the brain, and we get some of the conditions include memory loss, permanent memory loss.
Can some creatures recover from exposure if the exposure is not too prolonged?
Absolutely, and that is a very interesting phenomenon that they've been documenting at the Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito. That's run by Francis Gullen there, and they have lots of data showing sea lions that have had exposures but have survived, and they've tracked them afterward, and they're finding that there are all these sort of chronic effects. So they don't get out of it unscathed. They typically have these long-term chronic effects, which can affect their navigation. They end up going in the wrong locations. And various things like that.
So when they do recover, and granted recovery is limited, I mean, is there a ratio of number that are dying to the number that are surviving?
You know, I don't have that information. I know that there is a massive data set, basically 17 years worth of data that we can look at to start to define that. And I mean, for the interest of this story, you probably want to know that the first events like this occurred about 17 years ago in 1998 in Monterey Bay, California, and it's a very interesting situation for me because I happened to be a first-year graduate student at the University of California at Santa Cruz when this strange event occurred, and I helped in identifying that the problem was domoic acid poisoning in sea lions. And what was happening is sea lions were coming up on beaches and having seizures, and nobody knew what was going on. And I was studying domoic acid at the time because it was a known seafood toxin for humans. And the first human event occurred in the late 80s in Canada when folks ate contaminated mussels and had seizures, and three people died and many others suffered other kinds of consequences. Then there was an event in birds in the early 90s where anchovies were the vector of the toxin. So I was interested in sort of that toxin. I was already studying it, and somebody brought in a newspaper article said, hey, this, have you seen this? Look what's going on in the bay. Hundreds of sea lions coming on the shore, having seizures. They don't know what the problem is. They think it might be mercury poisoning. And because I was looking at the effects of domoic acid, I said, hey, I think it's domoic acid. So I called the Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito, I said, hey, can we check for the toxin? We found the toxin. We found the skeletons of the diatoms. We looked in anchovies that the sea lions were eating and found lots of toxin. And so that was basically the first documented event of domoic acid poisoning in marine mammals. What's interesting and concerning to me, I've been studying it now for 17 years, after that first event in Monterey, it's been a regular occurrence. Almost every year, some years worse than others, there are up to hundreds of sea lions that are poisoned by domoic acid each year. So that's been a sort of a common occurrence. Now I'm here in Seattle at the Northwest Fisheries Science Center running the Warn West program. We've been providing surveillance and looking at the presence of toxins. And in all this time, there has never been a documented seizuring sea lion in north of California. So we aren't seeing sort of the same effects as we see in California until this year. This year, and you saw, it sounds like you saw the video.
Right.
That sea lion was on Long Beach, Washington, and Dan Ayers from the Department of Fish and Wildlife called and said, hey, I think I have a seizuring sea lion on the beach. He sent the video. I was like, yes, that is classic domoic acid poisoning. Get some samples. He sent some samples, and we've detected high levels of the toxin. And so then, of course, it's an interesting story for me coming, 17 years later, having this first event in Washington, and then wondering, is this going to be sort of like the story in California, where we start to have more and more of these more severe events in marine mammals as you move north?
So a serious northern extension of the effects of domoic acid. Kathy Lefebvre is a research biologist at NOAA Fisheries and the creator of the Wildlife Algal Toxins Research and Response Network, or Warn West. You can join us on the exchange with questions and comments at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. With the other things going on in the oceans, Kathy, I wonder if there are any crossovers here, like do harmful algae blooms have anything in common with oxygen depletion or acidification or the warm water blob?
Well, that's an interesting part of this. Obviously, this is a different and unique event in terms of geographic extent, size, duration of this bloom, length of time, toxicity, etc. And the most obvious factor that is happening that's different sort of with the blob that you're talking about is this temperature, warmer water. And there's a lot of evidence and a lot of reason to believe and know that warmer waters are more favorable for harmful algal blooms. So that is certainly, and I want to say that oceanographers are really trying to investigate that now and figure out exactly what's happening physically and chemically in the ocean this year. But clearly the warm water is probably impacting the severity and size of this bloom, definitely.
All right, so that does make sense that it would track like that. I mean, it's just sort of a better set of conditions for the algae to bloom in, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Based on the sample numbers, do we have any idea how many critters are affected? Because I saw something that indicated there were like 3 seabirds and 39 confirmed marine mammals, but
yeah,
I'm not sure how old that was.
So we did have a press release where we sent out a figure where we get stranded marine mammals from collected from folks as far north in the Arctic Ocean as Barrow to Southern California. And our partners are basically NOAA's West Coast Marine Mammal Stranding Network, the Departments of Health and Departments of Fish and Game and Wildlife in Oregon, Washington, California, Alaska, the Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito, various universities. So we have just this huge network, tribal folks, USGS, out there sort of and people respond to marine mammal strandings and things. And so when we can, we get samples from those animals. But there are clearly more animals affected than we see. And there are also more animals that are stranded than we get samples for. So from our program, what we're showing is we looked at probably about 250 marine mammals this last summer only. And there were many more that stranded and had various issues. And in those 250, we had about 36 that had detectable levels of the toxin, and some of those in higher levels than we normally see, and spanning the entire coast, which is what makes this sort of a unique year. But there are many more animals. And I should also say that there will be other causes of stranding and mortality in marine mammals other than harmful algal blooms. There will also be sort of a combination of these factors. But clearly, domoic acid is definitely an issue for marine mammal health.
Okay, well, that gets to the next question, too, about whether the stranding of a blue whale, a dead blue whale on Gold Beach, Oregon, might have anything to do with domoic acid, or if that's just something that might have happened from some other reason.
That is an excellent question, and we are in contact with the folks that did the necropsy there. We will be getting samples, likely from that whale, to look for algal toxins. Sometimes it is a problem to be definitive about this because the toxins do degrade, and apparently this whale was a bit degraded before they were able to get some samples for us. The best samples that we look at are feces and urine for the presence of the toxins. So if you don't see the toxin in a marine mammal that has stranded, it doesn't mean it wasn't exposed and that it didn't play a role, but it's you don't always catch the toxin. You can't always detect it there. On the other side, there are many other causes of death. This blue whale, certainly in the food web, they eat krill. Krill accumulate domoic acid. We know that. So it's a potential to be there. But there could be other things happening like starvation or disease or a combination of many factors.
We're talking about the harmful algae bloom in the ocean right now with Kathy Lefebvre, a research biologist at NOAA Fisheries and the creator of the Wildlife Algal Toxins Research and Response Network, or WARN West. So since it's in the ocean food chain, I noticed that it seems like different states have responded differently. I think California shut down its Dungeness crab fishery. Oregon did not. Or what are you tracking there?
You know, I wish I had... the accurate details on that. I know that the Dungeness crab are in California. Yes, there's an advisory out in a closure. They're higher levels than they've ever seen. I don't know if the fishery is closed in Oregon, but I do know that the razor clam fishery has been closed all summer on the Pacific Northwest beaches. So that's been a pretty hard hit for those coastal communities that sort of depend on the tourism that razor clamming activity brings.
Are the effects, Kathy, of the algae bloom still on the rise, or do they seem to be tapering off now? We've been talking about this as a summertime thing, but it's obviously getting past summer, certainly inland.
Right. There is evidence that it's getting less toxin, that the bloom is declining. It's still there. There are still cells out there. There are also thoughts that as the toxin moves through the food web, you'll start to see it in different places. And that's kind of an interesting thing about the Dungeness crab, is that now we sort of think that the toxin is sort of in the pelagic zone. You know, the filter-feeding fish will be getting it, eating it from the bloom, swimming in the water column. But then as things sort of die and the toxin starts to sink and get into the benthos, or the bottom of the ocean and the bottom community, that's where you start to see it in crabs and things that are eating scavenging and eating anything. So there'll still be movement in the food web. There are certain organisms like razor clams that retain the toxin for up to a year after the bloom, but many other organisms like anchovies, they depurate or get rid of the toxin very quickly after the bloom ends. So you kind of have to look at certain parts of the food web and know what is happening with those components to know whether the toxin will be gone or is still there.
I know scientists like to stick to fairly precise terms, which makes sense because you're trying to monitor things that happen scientifically and reproduce results where you want to reproduce them. You know, people might think of this as a catastrophe, and I'm wondering, on the scale of things over 17 years of looking at domoic acid, is there anything quite like this?
No, not that I know of. And that's, to be really honest, that is sort of my concern, is thinking about this is a pretty severe event, and the concern for me is this going to start happening more often as the oceans warm? We know that there's warming going on. We know that the oceans have become warmer. We know that, for example, in the Arctic, there's loss of sea ice, which is going to open up more areas. There's increased shipping, and that may sound random, but you can get movement of toxic algal species between places in the ballast water of ships. So there are all kinds of factors associated with this sort of warming climate that would be favorable for the spreading of blooms, or at least a change in the balance. And so, you know, the concern is, yeah, this was pretty massive, but this happened every year. It would be pretty, pretty devastating.
And is there anything that allows you to predict future blooms and their effects?
And that is something that so many folks are working on, and we keep asking that question and keep wanting to be able to do that. There are folks at the Northwest Fisheries Science Center. I know Stephanie Moore has a system of ESPs, which is basically an automated sensor that you can put out in the water that can sort of measure various variables or characteristics in the water and toxin cells, et cetera, and try to get at what causes the initiation of a bloom, et cetera, and then sort of try to model that or predict when it might be coming.
I noticed there is that large new array of sensors. We talked to the folks at Oregon State University about those a few months ago. Would that help you at all? Are those looking for different things?
Well, I'm not sure what specific sensors you're talking about in Oregon. I do know that this one we're talking about, it's probably similar, where it's out in the water and it takes water samples daily, and it can tell you. Yeah, it can tell you when the cells are present or when they start to come, and sort of the environmental factors around that.
Okay, sounds like the same thing.
That would be very helpful.
Yeah. Interesting. So any discussion, I mean, if you can't really predict them, I guess you can't even get to a point of talking about things like managing them. You can only manage the effects, it sounds like closing fisheries and things like that.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing that is important. And obviously, they do just a fantastic job, the departments of health. And in terms of human health, we're lucky that way. There are regulatory limits in place for protection against this sort of severe toxicity. So when the products are, you know, contaminated with the toxin, then they are closed. You know, you cannot do recreational or commercial harvest. The problem is that's not the case, obviously, for marine mammals. We can't do that. We cannot control what they're eating. So I think that's where we're going to see the more severe effects. And then obviously the economic effects of fishery closures and sort of that whole cascade of things of not being able to use the fisheries as much as before.
And I guess the last question should be about whether it's happening elsewhere in the world. Is it just in the North Pacific we're seeing this record-setting bloom of toxic algae, or is it showing up in other oceans as well?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm aware, I mean, obviously aware of what's going on here. I am not aware of anything like this in other parts of the globe right now. And I'm sure that it's definitely a potential for other places in the world, but I'm not aware of that right now.
All right, sobering news all around. Kathy Lefebvre is a research biologist with NOAA Fisheries and the creator of Warn West, the Wildlife Algal Toxins Research and Response Network. Kathy, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.